Okay, good evening, everybody. I'm going to use the mic, at least for myself. Great to have everybody here on a very auspicious night, just a couple of nights before Yom Kippur. So glad to see so many of you here with us in the shul. I want to thank, as usual, our Dalit Education Committee, chaired by Dr. Lowe, for continuing to bring us very special programming throughout the year. This is our first adult ed event of the year. You're going to see Mir Tashem in the next couple of days. The new brochure will come out with all of the adult ed speakers we're going to have over the course of the year here in the shul. So really glad to be starting that tonight. I want to thank our sponsors for this evening, the Wassermans, the Rowers, Dan and Laura Lowe, the Yenowitzes, the Trarigs, and Eric and Laurie Schwartz. Thank you so much for your generosity. Rechaim Marcus has served as the rabbi of the Congregation Israel in Springfield, New Jersey for over 20 years. And anyone who's ever been to Springfield knows how beloved Rechaim is in his shul. After spending 19 years as a senior halacha rabbi at Beruya High School for girls, Rabbi Marcus now serves as a magid shir and mashpi at Heichal HaTorah. Rabbi Marcus studied under Lichtenstein Zatzal at Yeshiva Har Etzion and Chaim Ilson before earning his smicha at Yeshiva Beit Zachan and at Yeshiva University at Reitz. So many women in the greater Tanya community have been flocking to Rabbi Marcus's weekly parsha shir, including many members of my family, at the Tanya Beit Midrash, Heichal Jewish Center, whatever exactly that thing is, and they go for a good reason. My personal relationship with Rabbi Marcus goes all the way back to when I was 16 years old. I was a CIT at Camp Misora, and Rabbi Marcus was my Rebbe. We didn't do a whole lot of learning, but we did some learning. And Rabbi Marcus was my Rebbe that summer, and Mrs. Landsman was in camp in the summer, as was Rabbi Landsman, and Rabbi Penn, and everybody else who was there. And I also learned that summer that a Rebbe is allowed to tip his Talmud off a raft into the Delaware River. Something I didn't know until Rabbi Marcus taught that to me. And our relationship, Baruch Hashem, has continued since that time as I've matured. As Rabbi Marcus has continued to be a source of advice and chizuk and inspiration for me and my wife and my family for many years. It's always a very special treat when we get to spend Shabbos. We try to go once a year to Springfield for Shabbos. And it's a special treat because we get to know we're going to be able to hear and see Rabbi Marcus and to learn from him and be inspired by him. And I know also all too well what it means to be a community rabbi, taking time away from, actually I don't know, I'm with my shul, to be a community rabbi, also giving time during Seder Mitzvah for a different shul. It's really not a simple thing at all. And so with tremendous hakaras hatov, it is an honor and a privilege to welcome Rabbi Chaim Marcus.
See, that's how you know Rabbi Krohn is so beloved in the shul, because my shul, after speaking Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah, 2 days Rosh Hashanah, Shabbos, she was like, Rabbi, go away a little bit. You know, it's okay. You don't have to give shiurim during the week. Go wherever you want. You know, go. So, Rabbi Krohn Shlita, you're very much beloved here. I'm not so sure. But as the Rav mentioned, we're here holding Mamish right before Yom HaKippurim. Shabbos Shabboson. And I wanted to start off talking about Starbucks. Because, you know, Starbucks is closing a couple of hundred stores. I don't know if anyone heard about that. It's not because of me. Years ago, I stopped my weekly indulgence of the vanilla cream cold brew. I stopped that years ago. So they're closing a couple hundred stores. Not because I stopped just now. I stopped years ago. But there's something about Starbucks. Whenever you went in and you put in your order, and they said, you know, what's your name? What's your name? Like, tell us your name. We're going to write it on the cup. So there's a relative of mine who Rabbi Krohn knows very well also. When he would go in and they would say, what's your name? He would say, Beyonce. And the barista would look at him like, you don't look like a Beyonce. I mean, he's a little dark, you know, big beard, bigger than mine. And it was his shtick. And he would love it when, you know, the barista would call out, Beyonce, and everyone in the store would pick up their head and, like, look around. Now when he's in America, he likes to say his name is Am Yisrael Chai. And they say, Am Yisrael Chai, Am Yisrael Chai. Your cold brew with oatmeal milk is Am Yisrael Chai. But the question that they ask in Starbucks, what's your name, is in fact, according to one of the most intense works of Kabbalah, the first question you're asked when you get to the Beis Din Shalmala. According to the Maseches Chibut HaKever, literally the banging of the grave, it's quoted in the Sefer Reishis Chachma, a very intense work of Kabbalah. I do not recommend you learn it. The Vilna Gaon was once learning it with people, and he gave someone a heart attack in the middle of the shir. And when he went to go do Bikur Cholim, the person said, Rebbe, just tell me everything in the shir is not literal. He goes, when you get better, we'll talk about it, right? That's what the Vilna Gaon told him. But in Maseches Chibut HaKever, it says the first question when you get to the Beis Din Shalmala is going to be, what's your name? What's your name? And it's going to be, according to the description, a very intense moment, a very scary moment. And in fact, some of you might do something. I do this every Shmona Esrei, that actually a minug from the Shla Kadosh to make sure you remember your name. And what is that? In the very end of Shmona Esrei, before the second Yul Ratzon, before you take your three steps back, what do? You say psukim for your name. My name is Chaya Mordechai. I have Chona Malach Hashem Savilure Vaychaltzin. Mordechai, Mo'afti Sarasecha Kol Yem Yisichasi. Ches, Mem, Mem, Yud. Okay, I know my name. It's also the minog of many Chever Kaddishas. As a Rav, you're often close to the burial. You're often right there. Many Chever Kaddishas, certainly in Beit Shemesh, where I've been to many Levayas. When I lived in Beit Shemesh, my grandparents are in Beit Shemesh. The Chever Kaddishas says, Dainumen is, over and over. They're saying, Dainumen is, your name is, your name is, your name is. A very intense, intense reflection of the basic question of who are you? What's your name means who are you? What are your values? What is it that's so important to you? And here we are, as the Rav mentioned, two nights before Yom HaKippurim. I hope with the courage and vulnerability to honestly ask ourselves that question tonight. Who are you? But to get to that answer, we have to go to two other questions from Maseches Chibut HaKever. Because it doesn't stop there. That's first, who are you? What's your name? But then there's another question. There are in fact two. The first question is the question, I believe, of Rosh Hashanah. And the second question is the question of Yom HaKippurim. And these two questions, because when a person goes through Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to know who you are. You're supposed to know, how am I going to live Tav Shin Pei Vav 5786? How is this year going to be a different year? And what's the first question? The question that is Rosh Hashanah? Himlachta Koncha? Himlachta Koncha means, did you make your creator your king? What does it mean? Did you make your creator your king? Obviously, it means you're Mekabel Ol Malchus Shamayim. On a simple level, Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim means if Hashem is your king, then what? Then there are rules that the king says. You're going to follow the king's rules. Right? That's on a very basic level. Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim means you're going to follow the king's rules. But there's a second pshat in what Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim means. And I don't know how many of you learned the Torah of Rav Joey Rosenfeld Shlita. I also taught him in Camp Masorah many years ago, and a couple of his brothers many years ago. But Rav Joey is an addiction specialist who learns Kabbalah all day. When he was in Landers College, all day he was just learning Likutei Maran. And he said, it was great that they didn't try to force me to learn Gemara. He's often in a different planet, Rav Joey. And he said a beautiful pshat in a Rambam that I wanted to learn with you. It's a famous Rambam. You've all heard this Rambam, I'm sure. It's the Rambam in Perek Gimel Halacha Dalet of Hilchos Tshuva, where the Rambam talks about the message of the shofar. And the Rambam says, what? What's the shofar? Essentially, it's a spiritual alarm clock. Uru yishenim mishenaschem. Wake up, you sleepyheads. When you're asleep, wasting your time, behavle hazman, in the emptiness of the time, the vanities of the age, wake up, live a real life. But the Rambam then continues, the hekitzu nirdomim mitar damaschem. The Rambam refers to a second type of sleep. What's tardema? Tardema is the sleep that I think, I know in my kehila, a lot of people have been struggling with leading into Yamim Noraim. What's Tardema? The Radak, Rav David Kimchi, in his commentary on Bereisha shares, Avram Avinu falls into a Tardema by Bris Bein Habesarim. After God reveals to Avram Avinu the darkness of the gullus that's going to befall his children, Avram Avinu falls into a Tardema. The Radak says, Tardema, Shelo Yargish HaKe'ev. You know what type of sleep Tardema is? Rav Joey said, why does an addict use alcohol? Why does an addict use drugs? Because the world is so painful and the alcohol soothes them. You know why an individual suffering from depression sleeps? Because the world is too painful. You know why Avram fell into a Tardema when God showed him the vision of the Holocaust, of the Crusades? Because it was too painful for Avram Avinu. That reality was too painful. Avram Avinu goes to sleep. You know who else sleeps? Who else sleeps in a Tardema? And he's, no, he doesn't want to wake up from that Tardema. It's not just he's taking a pleasant shluf. Who else that we talk about, Yamim Noraim season? Yonah. Yonah's running away from God. And when does he fall into a Tardema? When the ship is getting tossed around. There was a fellow in my shul, Saul Greenfield, Olav Shalom, the first president when I came to Springfield. Saul's an amazing tzaddik. And he told me when he was being shipped to the Pacific during the Korean War, so he said one of the scariest sights in his life is when an alarm started blaring. He was on a huge, huge troop transporter, huge ship. Alarm started blaring and everyone had to close all the, seal up all the ports, everything. Saul wanted to see what's going on. He opens it a peek and he sees the most frightening thing. He sees a wall of water, a wave. He said, Rabbi, it looked 100 feet high. You know why they call the Buccaneer ride at Six Flags? You ever go on the Buccaneer? You remember that ride? What does a Buccaneer do? Brings the boat up and back. No, you don't remember? Maybe your kids went on it. I tried it once, never again. We'll never go on the Buccaneer again. Because the boats are tossed all over the place. That boat, Yonah, goes to the bottom of the boat, is sleeping there. The chief of the boat goes down, the captain, says, Malcha Nirdam, why are you sleeping? Get up, call out to your God. But Yonah's in a Tardema. He's in a depressive sleep. He doesn't want to confront the reality. He doesn't want to confront the mission that Hashem sent him on. And this year, personally, I know myself, I know so many in my kehila reached out to me going into Yom Noraim a second year with hostages, with nephews in Gaza and Syria. It's frightening. With Am Yisrael, Hein Am Levadad Yishkon, right? Last year, remember leading up to Rosh Hashanah last year? The second salvo of missiles, Chaste Hashem, minimal injuries, minimal casualties. This year, Canada, England, France, Spain, Portugal, like all our best friends, right? Except for Canada. They all kicked us out or tried to kill us at one point. Right? All throwing us under the bus. It's unbelievable. Rewarding terror. And there were people came to me, Rabbi, Rebbe, like I'm really struggling. I'm struggling with a certain nervousness, anxiety going into Yom Noraim. Hemlachta koncha, do you make Hashem your king? You know what it means? To be mekabel ol malchus shamayim, it doesn't only mean I'm going to follow his rules. When we hear the sound of the shofar, it means, are you creating a space in this world for Hashem? As Rabbi Shemayim Morgenstern Shlita, the great Mashpia Yushalayim says, when you were listening to the sound of the shofar, you're supposed to let it fill you and overflow out from you. Fill yourself with elikus. Make yourself a vehicle for Hashem in this world. Being Mamluch Hashem doesn't only mean I'm going to follow your rules. It means I'm going to make a dira b'tachtonim, as Reb Chaim Volozhiner says. Rosh Hashanah is maybe the most unique day of the entire year because God needs nothing except kaviyachol. I first heard this from Rav Avram Rivlin Shlita, Mashkiach, previous Mashkiach in Torah, in Kerem B'Yavne, in the Shmuz, in the Lishka, Elzman, when he said that on Rosh Hashanah, we're Mamluch Hashem. It's the only thing we can do for God, because Ein Melech below Am. There's no king without the nation. Where's the king if there's no nation? And so when we're Mamluch Hashem, when we're bringing Hashem into this world, we are creating a dira for our Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's what we're doing in this world. That's what Hemlach the Koncha means. And that, of course, was the message of the shofar. Before we sound the shofar, we say the pasuk min ha-meitzar karasika. But after you heard the sound of the shofar, what pasuk did we scream out? Ashri yom yodei surua, Hashem ba'or panecha yaleichon. Hashem ba'or panecha yaleichon. Wherever you go, I'm going to follow. And that's what real Malchus Shamayim means. It doesn't only mean being a law-abiding citizen. It means I'm following you on this journey. Lech teich acharei bamidbar be'eretz lo zeruha. Mekabel o Malchus Shamayim means that Hashem is the king, Hashem runs the world. And it's through the vehicle of the shofar, as Rav Soloveitchik and many others famously said, what's the message of shofar? It's all about revelation. It's all about the king is in the room. The king is in the world. And to live with that. And by the way, it's not only done on Rosh Hashanah. When's the final moment of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shamayim in the Yom Naram season? When is it? At the end of Nila. When we scream out Shema, Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuso, Hashem Elokim, Hashem Elokim, Hashem Elokim, over and over. That is the ultimate Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shamayim. That's the final moment when we declare that Hashem Himlach Dekoni, I am making my Creator my King. And that's the first question. That is Rosh Hashanah. And we were supposed to do that, and it's going to continue. And that's the avodah that's going to take us all the way until Ne'ilah. But there's also the second question. This is all Hakdama. Now, right, still got time for the Hakdama. We're good. The Rav said 10 o'clock, no problem. There's a slichos after, right? All good tonight. Okay, I mean, really, where are you going? Yom Kippur's in 2 days. I mean, unless you want to get in Averis, and then, you know, you got Yom Kippur coming. So, okay, we'll get. But the second question was actually made famous by the Vilna Gaon. The second question was made famous by the Vilna Gaon. Because the Vilna Gaon tried to make Aliyah famously. It was unclear what he was going to do there. Shrouded in mystery, there were Talmidim of the Gaon who felt that he was going because he wanted to sort of force Mashiach to come. That's ultimately why the Arizal also, he went to go find Reb Chaim Vital and to try and force Mashiach to come. The Vilna Gaon went on this mysterious Aliyah trip, and he wrote his final ethical will for his wife, primarily, and his children, called the Igeres Hagra. He never made it to Eretz Yisrael. There are legends as to what happened, why he didn't make it, why he was forced back, but he never made it to Eretz Yisrael, the Vilna Gaon. He never stepped foot there. And the Gra in his Igeres quotes from Maseches Chibut HaKever. Again, the first question, what's your name? Second question, Himlach Dekoncha, did you make your creator your king? The third question, where we come to the second king of the Yom Naram season, is Hemlachta Chaverecha. The very end of the letter, he writes to his wife, he writes to his children, remember the question that you're going to be asked. Hemlachta Chaverecha. Did you make your friend king over you? Now this is really revolutionary. And this is something very difficult to really make part of us. But this, in many ways, is the avoda of the Aseres Yimei Tshuva to Yom HaKippurim. Rabbi Yerucha Molshin, the Lakewood Rosh Hashiva, points out in his Sefer that the Rambam in Hilchus Tshuva doesn't talk about really Bein Adam L'Chevra Yero until you get to the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. In the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, he starts talking about Bein Elul Mechira. Elul is a different avoda. The Tshuva of Elul is not that. Rosh Hashanah, it's about Malchus Shemayim. The Tshuva is Tshuva of Kabbalah Sal Malchus Shemayim. When you come to the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, now already we start talking about Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And this is, I believe, the key to everything. It's the Torah that I've shared the most in my shul. Those that come to the Wednesday shir might remember. The Torah I've shared the most in my shul in 25 years in Springfield, New Jersey, is the line that Rabbi Itzel of Volozhiner writes in the Akdamah to the Nefesh HaChaim. His father, Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner, was the primary Talmud of the Gaon. The primary Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. And he started the Eim HaYeshivas, the mother of all yeshivas. Yeshiva Seitz Chaim of Volozhin. Every modern yeshiva comes from Volozhin. And what was Margala Befume, the Reb Chaim Volozhiner? What does his son say? Was always in my father's mouth. Da lo la'atzmacha nivra, lo nivris ha'adam ela lahoel la'achrini. The message Reb Chaim Volozhiner always shared with his family and his Talmidim was no, that you're not created for yourself. Human beings were created only to help other people. That's why you're in this world. We know, makes sense, because his Rebbe, at the end of Igeres Agra, remember, Imlachta Chaveirecha. We know that in Evan Shlema, teachings of the Gaon is quoted as saying, the primary avod of a person in this world is to fix their midos. And primarily in Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And this, if we can say it in a blunt way, is that it's not about you, Babala. This world is not about you. This world is about the impact that you can have on others. The difference that you can make in the life of others. That's Hemlachta Chaveirecha. And this is what some people explain is why on Yom Kippur we're like Malachim, right? Baruch, Shem, Kivod, Malchus. We scream it out loud because we're like, how are we like Malachim on Yom Kippurim? Because on Yom Kippurim, aside from the not eating, the not drinking, the Chamesh Zinum, which the Rav spoke about, but the idea that on Yom Kippur, we're supposed to divest ourselves of any sin, a hatred towards another Jew, any kinna, any jealousy, any kitata, any machlokes. Because the Malachim are kulam ahuvim, kulam berurim, kulam giborim, kulam kidoshim, kulam osim, be'ema v'yira ratzon konam, together, singular in purpose. When we come to Yom HaKippurim, the Ikar Avoda is the Avoda of thinking of others. And Emlachta Chaveirecha is the key to Geula Klalis, but also Geula Pratis. Geula Klalis, we know. Those that have come to my shiurim know that there's one thing that I struggle with, and I speak about it all the time. I speak about it all the time because it weighs on me very heavily. This is my third year of the Kabbalah of Shmiras HaLashon Yomi every day. I started Rosh Hashanah Tavshin Pei Dalid because the Jewish people were the most fractured I've ever seen in my lifetime. Yom Naram 2023, the Jewish people were the most fractured I'd seen in my lifetime. Do you remember what was happening? The Motzei Shabbos demonstrations. Do you remember what happened in Tel Aviv that Yom Kippur? Do you remember what happened to Rabbi Leo D on Chol Moed Sukkis at an outdoor hallel? He was shoved to the ground. The Jewish people were fractured. And I remember begging my shul before Ne'ilah on 2023, daven for the Jewish people because I'm afraid of what's going to happen to us. Because we're so fractured. We're so broken. And that's when our oivim have a certain shlita over us. And it was only till after Havdalah on Simchas Torah, someone in my shul came up to me shaking, said, Rebbe, do you remember what you were crying about before Ne'ilah? I said, no, I can't think of anything. What did I say before Ne'ilah? He said, you're afraid of what's going to happen to the Jewish people because you've never seen such machlokas in the Jewish people. And we know Lashon Hara is horrible. We know how poisonous it is. I spoke about it just on the Chavetz Chaim's yard site. Rabbi Lam Zatzal said the godless Chavetz Chaim, he was a revolutionary. He took socially acceptable behavior and showed how evil it is. It's evil. The Chavetz Chaim points out. Now I asked the Rav if I could say this. I said it a little harsher in Mishal, but don't worry, I'll tone it down a little bit. I know we put a lot of efforts into our tefillas in Yom Naron. We daven a lot. Maybe some of you did Reb Meilich Biderman Segula Tehillim 2 times, Rosh Hashanah night. We cry in tefillas. We learn Torah. You know the Chafetz Chaim says, quoting from the Zohar HaKadosh, that a person who speaks Lashon Hara, you've lost the power of Dibur. Your tefillas are not going to have the effect you think they're going to have. Your Torah is not going to have the effect that you think it's going to have. We wonder, there's more Torah being learned today than ever before in Jewish history. Maybe the days of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, doubtful. Maybe, that's the only time, maybe, probably not. Tefillah? Tinek alone probably has more minyanim than I don't know what cities, you know, what countries, right? 100 years ago. I mean, take away Poland and Lithuania, that's it. You know, like seriously. How many minyanim? Tztaka? Mika Amcha Yisrael. The Jewish people, Rav Wolfson said, were the greatest generation in tztaka. It's unbelievable. But yet, why are there still hostages after 723 days? Why is there still my nephews in Gaza going into Jenin? My niece is home with their 3 kids over Yontif. When are we going to step up and realize the other Torah of Rabbi Lamb? We said it twice on Rosh Hashanah. We're going to say it on Yom Kippur. We're going to say it on first 2 days Sukkot. We're going to say it Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkot. We're going to say it on Shemini Atzeres. We're going to say it on Simchas Torah. Two very painful words. Rabbi Lamb would often talk about this. I've heard him say these drashas when I was in YU for many years. And I've read his drashas. He says, you know what two of the most painful words are in our liturgy? Umipnei chata einu. We think we're in galus because of what happened 1900 years ago. No. We're in galus because of what happened this year. It's a very painful thing to think about. We're not in galus because of what happened thousands of years ago. We're in galus because of what happened this year. This year. And if we want to recognize how bad Lashon Hara is. We all know how horrible it is. It was the first sin in all of history. Everyone thinks the first sin in history was eating from the Eitz Hadas. It's not true. The Chafetz Chaim points out, the Chazal said, Lashon Hara was before eating from the Eitz Hadas. Where was the Lashon Hara? Where was the Lashon Hara? Chava accepted the Lashon Hara that the Nachash spoke about Hashem. The Nachash said, God doesn't want you to eat from that because you eat from that tree, you're going to be like God. And Chava believed the Lashon Hara, the Nachash, was saying about Hashem. That was the first sin. It was the sin that brought us down to Egypt. Why La'eved Nimkar Yosef? Why was Yosef sold as a slave? What did Chazal tell us? Because he said Lashon Hara about his brothers to Yaakov. When Moshe Rabbeinu is growing up, the prince of Egypt, literally in the lap of luxury, and he goes out, Vayar b'sivlo sam, he sees the suffering of the Jewish people, and he says, Heilig b'shefer, Holy Creator, why are your children suffering like that? Until, achei no da hadavar. When does he realize why we're suffering? Do you remember when? When Dasan says to him, are you going to kill me like you killed that Mitzri yesterday? Moshe Rabbeinu says, achei no da hadavar. Now I don't have to worry. Now I don't have to wonder why the Jewish people are suffering. They're talking Lashon Hara about each other. It also caused the sin of the Meraglim, created Tisha B'Av. And we know what the Gemara in Yuma says, sin aschinam in Lashon Hara is why we are still in Golus, not because of what they had years ago. Right? The Netziv, his introduction to Sefer Bereishis at Rabbi Adler's Atzal, had on his answering machine at TABC. If you ever left messages for Rabbi Adler, I've left many messages for Rabbi Adler over the years. And his message that he left was, let me share a Dvar Torah. I mean, the only person I've ever called him, the answering machine was a Dvar Torah. He was Kol Kulo Torah. It was like wild. It was about the Netziv's Hakdama to Sefer Bereishis. about why it's called Sefer HaYashar. Because you could be learning Torah, davening, giving tzedakah, and not be a yashar in how you treat people. And that was why the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. There was Torah. There was davening. There was tzedakah. But they weren't treating people like people. And that brought about Churban HaBayis. And here we are today. We're still in Golus. We're still suffering. Because I know you're in Tinek, but I know you're feeling what's going on in Eretz Yisrael. We all are. Even if you don't have mishpacha that's in Gaza. Even if you don't have mishpacha that's serving in Syria. That's running to bomb shelters. My daughter in seminary in Har Nof. The attack in Ramot. Someone just got on a bus. This is Golus. We might sometimes forget it because we live in such the greatest Golus that we've ever had. But we're in Golus. And comes Yom Noram, and we have to ask ourselves the difficult question. What are we going to do about it? How are we going to make a difference? The most extreme hamalachta chavercha is that it's not about you. Recognize, who are you? I heard from Rabbi Lavi Greenspan, Shlita, a close friend of mine, a Yesod Gadol from Rav Asher Weiss, Shlita. You know what the Klal Gadol of Lashon Hara is? If it doesn't have direct relevance to you, don't talk about it. It's a very simple piece of advice. If it doesn't have direct relevance to you, don't talk about it. What does it matter? How the Chazan davened. Okay, you liked it. You didn't. No offense to the Chazan. I'm sure the Chazanim here are great. We had some new Chazanim in our shul. So like, I reminded everyone, the Rav Pamvart, the most dangerous time of Yom Naran is the meals on Rosh Hashanah, because everyone goes home, starts talking about the Chazanim. The rabbi, okay, they talk about the rabbi, I get it, you know? But not here, I'm sure. But you know, what did she wear to shul on Rosh Hashanah? Can you imagine? It's Rosh Hashanah. But that's the Rav Pam said, the most dangerous time of Yom Naran is not Ne'ilah, not the meals on Rosh Hashanah. Because what can people talk about? But if you're hamlachta chaverecha, if you know it's not about you, you're here to serve. That's why we're in this world. To serve Hashem and to serve other people. But to do that takes a lot of humility. That's why Mefarshim point out, what sin, what midah comes up in the most alchetz? We say the alchetz, close to 50 alchetz, 9 times. If you're at all the minyanim, you say it on Erev Yom Kippur, Mincha, you say it at Marv in the private, after Shachris, private, public, Musaf, private, and then in Mincha, private, public. So we say the full Al-Chaitz 9 times, almost 50 Al-Chaitz. You ever analyze Al-Chaitz? Do you know what the number one midah you will find in Al-Chaitz explicitly and implicitly? Arrogance. People think it's about them. Einayim ramos, lifted eyes, netias goren, azus meitzach, brazenness of the forehead. Some of us have bigger ones than others, right? But azus meitzach. We're talking about arrogance. We think it's about us. It's not about us. It's not about us. The most extreme formulation, the most extreme is shomeach herpasim veinam yeshivim. And we know that's why it's the greatest zechus a person can have. The greatest zechus a person have is to be a mevater. I know that person was a jerk to you. And that person made your life hell. And you know what? You really hate them for it. But when you come to a Yom Kippur, in Tefillah Zaka, the challenge is, can you move past it? We know in positive psychology, one of the most important things is the ability to forgive. I mean, it was crazy. Charlie Kirk's wife, she forgave the murderer. I was like, okay, that's a little, whoa, okay. We were not going to go there. But to be able, shomeach herpasam veinam yeshivim, the Gemara says that's the most extreme, extreme zuchus a person can have. I told this story years ago for the sake of time. I'll just be mekatzer. But years ago on Yom Kippur, how do we forgive? I told the story that I heard from someone who was at the meeting at a support group in Jerusalem. Of couples struggling with infertility. And someone told the story of a couple that had been to that support group, was childless for 20 years, Hashem Yirachim, and they went to Reb Chaim Kanievsky, And they asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky for a bracha. And Reb Chaim said to them, have you gone to the best doctors? We have. Have you given tzedakah as zechus? We have. Have you davened? They said, we could show you our sidurim, our tehillim, zamar chazorim. He said, have you gone to Baalei Kabbalah? And they said, we have. So Reb Chaim Kanievsky said, I'm going to be totally honest with you, my bracha is going to do nothing. Sometimes there's just a gzeir and shamayim, and that's it. And they said, what if we can't accept that? Reb Chaim said, I'll give you a piece of advice. Find a person, shomeach erpasim ve'enem mishivim, that is publicly disgraced and doesn't respond, and get a bracha from that person. Fast forward, a young kala moved into an apartment. Downstairs neighbor, an old lady, was very bitter because she had cursed the apartment. She cursed. Long story. Bekitzer, the woman was a little crazy. She lost in Beis Din. She lost in court because the people before them extended their porch. It took away a couple of hours of her sunlight. She was very, very bitter about it. Very bitter. That Shabbos, the first Shabbos, the young couple is in their new home. There's a big kiddush in the shul, big mechitza down the middle, the men and the women. And all of a sudden, the young kala is being greeted by all these people. Welcome, welcome. And all of a sudden says, why are you greeting her? She's a machshefa. She's a rishoa. We don't want her in our community. Who is it? The bitter woman from downstairs, screaming bloody murder. And the young kala is about to say, you lost in Beis Din, you're a lunatic. Someone grabs her by the arm from behind, whispers in her ear, please don't say anything. The old lady keeps haranguing her like crazy. The young kala bursts into tears. She's about to scream back. The woman grabs her intensely, brings her close to her, whispers, like she feels the lips against her ear saying, I'm begging you, don't say anything. And this young kala just stands there taking it. And she's sobbing. And eventually the old lady runs off. She turns around, middle-aged woman says, I've been waiting for you for a year and a half. Please give me a bracha that I should have a child. The Rav, who spoke at that group, someone I know was at the session, said, after 22 years of infertility, this couple was zochet to a child. I told that story in my show. Listen to the follow-up. That story has since been published. It's in one of the books. I heard it from someone who's at the meeting. But the follow-up guy calls me from my show, named Stephen Prower of Elshom, tzaddik of a guy. He was an architect, did a lot of work in Lakewood, and he called me up on a Thursday evening. It was 10 o'clock at night. He said, Rabbi, you awake? I'm like, I'm awake, Steve. He goes, I got to tell you a crazy story. You're going to be up? I'm like, where are you now? He goes, I'm in Lakewood. I'm like, I don't know, Steve. He goes, I'll bring you a shawarma from Glopite. If you know Glopite, you know their shawarmas. I'm like, okay, I'll stay up. Last time I ate a shawarma after 11:30 at night, I realized I'm not young. It's not the Camp Masor days when we had barbecues with Rabbi Brazil at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, we're done. We're done. No more. But there I was munching on the shawarma close to midnight. And Stephen Prower said, Rabbi, remember a couple of years ago you told us that story of that couple, 22 years? I said, yeah. He goes, today he was working on a house in Lakewood, very wealthy family, only has boys. He was adding an extension onto their house, and only the littlest one was home, a little kid who at one point bends down, picks up Steve's tape measure, runs away, and Steve says, oh, you little schmendrix. He was a really jolly, sweet guy. Oh, come here, little schmendrix, chasing the kid around, and the kid is cracking up, and Steve is saying, oh, give me the tape measure. The mother runs in and starts screaming. Steve says, I didn't touch him. I didn't. She goes, no, Steve. The mother picks up the boy's crying, puts him down, is dancing with him, calls her husband, come home now. What's wrong? Shmuley, is he's fine. Come home. He says, what's going on? He says, Steve, you haven't been here in years. This is the first time Shmuley is walking. He says, what? He says, we brought him to CHOP. We brought him to Texas. We brought him to Europe. We had no idea. No one could explain. Waist down. No one could explain it. Their son, Shmuley, couldn't move from the waist down. And the mother's dancing. She's crying with him. She says, Steve, I know why it happened. He says, why? Now he says, Rabbi, understand this family, they have beautiful guest rooms when friends come over and family comes over, but their basement, This is the most unique basement I've ever seen. Their basement is like a huge bunk from camp. There are a bunch of beds, no bunk beds, beds with a little night table, a little Shabbos lamp, stall showers, but nice ones. There are such nice ones. Stall bathrooms. Why? They're all boys, right? They told their sons, if there's any out-of-town boy on an off Shabbos that has nowhere to go, just bring him to our house. Says, Rabbi, their dining room table, take a guess how many people could fit. Over 70 people, the dining room table. You thought yours was big, huh? I thought mine was big, you know, could fit 15 easily, you know, maybe close to 20 easily. But Mamish is what he told me. He was their architect. And she said, we always had lots of people. This year, one of the older Bachram, a guy in BMG close to 40, he grew up in Israel. In his early 30s, he just couldn't stand being around, you know, a lot of younger siblings. He needed to, Mishana Malka, Mishana Mazel. He came to learn in BMG. And he was learning in BMG. He had nowhere to go, no mishpacha. So he became a ben bayis by this family. He would go there all the time for sudas, almost every yontif. He had his bed. And it was during Shulchan Aruch at the Seder that someone made such an offensive comment to this young man, this older, such an offensive comment, made such a mean joke at his expense that everyone at the table, like everyone took that breath in. She told Stephen, I saw his face changing colors. I said, Yaakov, Bohena, Yaakov, Yaakov. He couldn't even hear me. I told the guy next to him, hit it, tap him on the shoulder. Come here, now. Into the kitchen. He comes in the kitchen, steam coming out of his ears. She says, Yaakov, you have a karas atov to me and my husband that we host you all the time? He goes, what? He goes, have we ever asked you for anything? You have a karas atov? He said, of course I have a karas atov. He said, Yaakov, go back in, be mochel that guy, don't say anything, and give my son Shmuley a bracha that he should walk. He said, what? He said, I want you to go back in there. Don't say anything. Give Shmuley a bracha. The son who met this Yaakov in BMG, the oldest son, ran into the kitchen. What's going on here? She says, go get Shmuley. Shmuley's attached to the table by a special chair because otherwise he would like just sink below. The oldest brother is holding the youngest brother in his arms. Yaakov turns to the mother and says, when do you want him to walk by? It's a true story. She says, if he could walk by his upsharon, it would mean the world to me. Stephen Prower tells me, Rabbi, you know what tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. is? Shmuley's upsharon. Shomeacher pasam vena meshivim. We can't imagine. We can't imagine the koach of a person who's so locked in that they know it's not about them. And I'm going to let it go. And it's not easy. It's very difficult. That's why it's the greatest char. But I want to share with you, okay, I could go a little bit more. I want to share with you something else that's pretty crazy. Anyone ever hear of Dr. Rebecca Heiss? Dr. Rebecca Heiss. Okay, good, because she's one of the foremost stress psychologists. It means you're not stressed out. Every woman's thinking, you kidding me? Right, okay, we're all stressed out. I get it. Me and Rabbi Krohn might win, okay, for most stressed out this time of year. One of my Balabatim asked, Rabbi, which is harder, like Yom Noram season or Pesach? I'm like, you're kidding, right? Do you come to shul? Like, hello. Right, okay. But Dr. Rebecca Heiss, she gave a TED Talk dealing with stress. She's written books on it. She teaches it in college. Again, you're stressed, check her out. Check out her TED Talk. She wrote in the Wall Street Journal not too long ago that she was flown to Hawaii to give a big talk about how to de-stress to the major executives of a huge international company. They flew all their big executives to Hawaii, and she was going to be talking about stress. And there she is, 24 hours before her talk, having a meltdown in the lobby of her hotel. Why? What did they do? They lost her suitcases. She had no clothes. She's like, I'm in a t-shirt and sweatpants. I'm speaking to a room of suits tomorrow. I need clothes. The hotel manager sees that she's freaking out, goes, what can I help you with? She goes, I need clothes. Okay, there's a driver, fancy hotel. Take her to the clothing stores. Take her to the store. She's in the third store. It's all Hawaiian shirts. She's getting even more stressed. In the third store, she's like having a meltdown. The manager comes up to her, puts her arm and says, honey, what's wrong? She says, I need clothes, but like professional clothes. She goes, oh, you're not going to find that here. You're going to find that 40 minutes from here. But the driver from the hotel, he has to go back. She goes, you know what? Here. She goes to her purse. Take my BMW. It's right outside. Brand new convertible. Go take it. I'm going to put, give me your phone. Puts into Waze, the address, the name of the other store. 40 minutes. Go get it. Dr. High says, I don't even know your name. She goes, I'll tell you my name when you come back. Okay. As she's driving 40 minutes out of the store, she thinks, am I an unwitting drug mule? Like, am I like, what's in the back of this car? Am I transporting a body? Like, why did she just give me her brand new BMW convertible to drive 40? She has no idea if I'm a good driver. Like, she has no idea. She comes back 2 hours later with the clothes that she needs. And she says, what's your name? She goes, my name is Tani. Why do you do that? And she said, that's how we take care of people here in Hawaii. But then she said something deeper. I've been stressing a lot. I have a daughter who just moved back to the mainland. And I'm just hoping that she knows no one. I'm hoping someone might do something similar for her if she was in this situation. And then Dr. Heiss goes back to the hotel. The manager runs over. What happened? Everything okay? The driver came back. He said, you were in the middle of a meltdown. I told him, how did you leave her? He said, no, you don't understand. This store manager, she's amazing. The people here in Hawaii are the best. The hotel manager starts to tear up. He says, I just moved here 3 months ago with my family for this job opportunity. And I'm still so nervous. My wife and kids haven't found their place. You're making me feel so good that this is what people in Hawaii are like. And you know what Dr. Heiss wrote? Listen to this. In the self-help field, we tend to promote the usual stress management arsenal. Meditation apps, massage therapy, breathing exercises, yoga classes. These aren't wrong, but they rely on the individual to solve their own stress. In reality, these tools can sometimes exacerbate the problem, right? Like, I'm supposed to be calm now, right? I'm doing the breathing. It's not working, right? And like, they get you more worked up, right? A study of workplace interventions to reduce stress published in Industrial Relations Journal in 2024 revealed a startling truth. Of the 90 different stress reduction strategies tested in corporate settings, which included meditation, massage, breathing, yoga, only one consistently mitigated the negative effects of stress. Can anyone guess? Serving others. Serving others. My Hawaiian crisis had been an impromptu case study. It helped me see how we've been approaching stress relief backward. Instead of turning inward with bespoke wellness practices, we do best when we turn outward towards the needs of others. This doesn't mean meditation and self-care are useless, just that they are incomplete solutions. We're all carrying invisible stressors. Some not so invisible, right? We're also all potential sources of relief for one another. In a world obsessed with self-optimization and individual wellness solutions, the most radical act might be the simplest one. Noticing when someone else needs help and then providing it. And this Dr. Abraham J. Twersky says in his book, Let Us Make Man, is the whole yesod of self-esteem. You know how you get self-esteem? By treating other people with dignity and respect. That's how you get self-esteem. That's how you feel good about yourself. Ezu mechubad. Who's honored? Hamchabed es abrios. Exactly. That's where you find kavod. By giving kavod to others. And this, of course, okay, I'm going to leave out some stories because I'm already over time. I apologize. But I'm just going to end with something that the Rav spoke about second day Rosh Hashanah. Just follow up. Do you realize we spoke about one text of the Yom Naram, Sefer Yonah. Yonah's running away. What biblical text is really the key to the whole Yom Naram? What's the key to the Yom Naram? Which biblical text? The Akedah. Obviously the Akedah. There's something called a leitvort. A leitvort means a lead word. When you're studying a piece of literature, right? Look for a word that's a unique word that appears again and again and again. And that word is the key to a whole different layer of meaning. What's the leitvort in the Akedah? What's the word? It's how the Baal Musaf starts his tefillos on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. What's the word? Hineni. Hineni. First, God calls to Avram. Hineni. Himlachta koncha. Then Yitzchak calls to Avram. Hineni. Himlachta chaverecha. And then the Malach calls out it. The Rav said, second day Rosh Hashanah, Avram, Avram. Avram responds, Hineni. Because that was the moment of self-actualization and self-realization. By being Mamlech Hashem, by being Mamlech other people, that's how you can answer the question of who you are. By saying Hineni to Hashem. Not only to follow yours, but Hineni to build up Emunah in this world. And as the Rambam says in so many tzaddikim, the more Emunah, the more Ashkacha. The more we turn away from God, the more He turns away from us. Hanochi Aster Aster Panai. The more Emunah, when we're Mamlech Hashem, we're bringing more and more of Hashem into this world. How are we responding, Hineni? I'll end with a WhatsApp status. A WhatsApp status that I mentioned in Shir, but I actually printed it out. It's a WhatsApp status that one of my nephews wrote. This is a nephew who learned in Karen B'Yavne, who memorized Shas Mishnayos Baal Peh, so when he went into the army and did Shmirah, he could just like review Mishnayos Baal Peh. Impressive fellow. When he was called up, I think for the fourth time, the picture was him and his madim and his three little pitzulas, the baby in the carriage, helping his wife go to her mother because he was leaving. He was going down to Gaza. And the next was what this WhatsApp status. Listen to what he wrote. Modim anachnu lefanecha. Hashem Elokeinu velokei avoseinu shesamta chelkeinu mi magine am kodshecha. We give thanks in front of you, Hashem, our God, and the God of our fathers, that you've placed our portion amongst those that are protecting your holy nation. That was my nephew Sam. That's his Hineni. My challenge to you is, what's your Hineni? What's your Hineni to Hashem? What's your Hineni to other people? Because the Hineni of who you are, you're only going to find when you first say the first two. That's how you're going to find the third Hineni. When you can say Hineni to Hashem, nor Emuna, only Emuna, more Emuna. Hineni to other people. You don't have to be a chayal. You know what you have to be? Be a person who's just going to tell people, I'm not talking about other people. I want to bring the geula. I don't want to be a part of the problem that's poisoning this world. Literally, that's what Lashon Hara is. If we could just be open and upfront and clear about it. Stop it. Stop it. Don't talk about others. It doesn't help. It doesn't help. Makes us feel self-righteous. What does it do? What does it do? And again, we don't have to agree with every Jew. That's never going to happen. But as my Rebbe Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal often said, the Jews around Har Sinai all had a different view of Kabbalah Satorah. They were all around the mountain. Everyone had a different view of Torah. But you know what? They were all Ki'ish Echad B'Levechad. We didn't see things the same way. We still don't see things the same way. But it doesn't mean we're not Ish Echad. Let's live that. And only when we do those things will you be able to answer, who are you? The person who says Hineni. The person who's ready to step up in a meaningful, real way. And those are the three questions. One, who are you? They're going to ask you in Starbucks. Now you have some shtick you can use. Two, did you make your creator your king? Not only do you follow his laws, but do you bring him into this world? Do you believe that he's running this world? The more emunah, the more hashkacha. But three, hemlach t'chaverecha. How do you view your fellow Jew? How do you view your fellow Jew? We know what the Gra wrote to his family. We know what Reb Chaim Belozhiner would often tell his children and his Talmidim. And I hope, with Hashem's help, we're so close. We're living in the times of Mashiach. We're living in the Raya, the last thing. It's a tweet. Anyone this year knows. My favorite social media, I know it's not called tweets anymore, I just don't know what they're called now. X's? Back then it was a tweet. When someone tweeted, it was in 2017, if you told a Jew 100 years ago in Poland, then 100 years from now, there's going to be a Jewish president of the Jewish country in Eretz Yisrael who's going to die, 70 heads of state, presidents, prime minister, kings, princes from all over the world are going to come to the Levaya. The Levaya is going to be on Erev Shabbos. They're only going to let one rabbi speak and two family members. They're going to cut their spadim short because when Shabbos comes in, the airport in this country closes. Prince Charles, you're not going back to England. Right? Can you imagine? If you told a Jew that in 1917 in Poland, he would tell you one of two things. Either, du bist Meshige, you're a lunatic, or it's Mashiach Zeit. That's clearly Mashiach times, right? It happened in 2017 when Shimon Peres died. 70 heads of state from all over the world came. The only rabbi was Rabbi Rabinovich from the Kotel who spoke. Two family members. That was it. So Prince Charles could get back to England. President could come back to Washington. Prime Minister could get back to Canada. Because otherwise, Ben-Gurion was going to close, and that would have been the most Israeli thing ever, right? I just, like, imagine the guard. No, airport closed. No, you know. Go with King David. Go to the Waldorf. Go wherever you want. Not open, airport. Tomorrow night, say Sakochavim, you know. Airport's open then, right? Yeah, you tell Air Force One that. Like, thank God, Baruch Hashem, they all got out. Chever, we're so close. We're so close. We see miracles. We see prophecies every day. And we have the zechus. We have the zechus to be the generation that's going to bring Mashiach Tzidkenu. Let's make it happen. Ben Hirav Yameinu. Shkoach.